It's only entertainment.
Welcome back to The Talking Hedge. I'm Josh Kincaid, capital markets analyst and host of your cannabis business podcast. Today, we've got Carol Ortega Alvarez. She is a managing director with Musica Capital Group. Carol, thanks for being on The Talking Hedge.
Thank you, Josh. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Where are you at right now? Are you in Colombia or?
I'm in Bogota, Colombia right now. However, I live in Los Angeles, in California.
Okay. So you're all over the place. Tell us a little bit about how you got in the industry. What is Musica Capital Group? What's it all about?
Yes. In 2013, I was living in Portland, Oregon, and I saw the opportunity the legalization of cannabis, medicinal and recreational for adult use, was happening in 2014 in Oregon. So I saw the big economic opportunity and I decided to offer my services as a financial professional, raising money and connecting people for the industry in Oregon, in Portland, Oregon. Then in 2014, I had the opportunity to represent the Latino community within the state regarding the issue. And in 2016, our group of professionals decided to provide our services in Latin America. So since 2016, I have been able to work in all over the Americas. We also opened an office in Los Angeles, California. We realized that in Portland, Oregon, back then, we only could serve 7 entrepreneurs. In 2014, license in Oregon for Latin entrepreneurs were very limited because there were not many Latinos interested in joining the industry. As you might be aware, most of our communities have been one of the most damaged from the war on drugs. So that have some consequences. And one of them is the fear and some stigma that our community have regarding these tremendous economic opportunities. So some of us decided to take the chance, decided to take the opportunity, but hopefully we can see through the years and hopefully under some coming legalization at the federal level, more entrepreneurship, more Latin entrepreneurship leading companies of the space. So we started our practice by then. I remember that I was thinking, what should I do for the industry? I tried to cultivate, but I wasn't good at it. So I decided to just do what I'm good at it and where I had most experience, and that's finance, business strategy, and fundraising. So we have been able to fundraise for more than 30 companies in the space, most of them leading by Latin entrepreneurs. And this is something that we are proud about. And we have been able to mobilize about $50 million from Latin American investors through All the Americans, and North American investors as well through Latin America, helping investors and entrepreneurs capitalize in the space since almost 8 years ago now. We have been able also to fund two major platforms in the space. One is Latino Science Forum, that is a symposium, a scientific symposium dedicated to empower Latino scientists in the space. We have been focusing on cannabis. And also Latino Investment Summit, which is probably the first Shark Tank type of platform for Latin Americans entrepreneurs and investors. And we have been focusing on cannabis, but lately there's a lot of interest in tech and cryptocurrencies. So probably we are going to reach that industry soon as well to promote what our entrepreneurs in Latin America and Latin entrepreneurs in the US are doing, and also to offer good investment opportunities for Latin American investors, both institutions and individuals.
So with the Latino Investment Summit, you're obviously trying to get some entrepreneurs and people involved with this space. But like you mentioned, there's so much stigma that there's not a lot of people that are wanting to dive into it. And we saw that on the West Coast too. People were still, they didn't want their friends to know that they were applying, because if they didn't get the money, then they could go back to their regular job. So there's, I've seen a lot of that. I'm wondering what is going to lift that stigma. Is it going to be the legalization in Mexico? Will that help? Or what do you think is going to help alleviate that negative stigma attached to cannabis?
Definitely. I think that once legalization happens in every single jurisdiction in Latin America, that brings education, that brings opportunity, and people will start to understand that is a new door that have been opened and economic possibilities for the region. So, for example, in Colombia, we since 2016, we have seen more entrepreneurs getting involved into the cannabis industry. So first, education through science works, fighting the stigma, I think that is the most important tool, but also the economic opportunity. Once entrepreneurs learn about how big it is for our region, for Latin America, this opportunity, the legalization of cannabis, we are seeing more interest from entrepreneurs and also investors. Last year was a very interesting year for Latin America in terms of the cannabis industry. We saw a tremendous increase in interest from investors, both institutions and individuals. Of course, institutions have been more afraid to join the industry because the federal legalization is not legal yet, and that definitely creates some limitations for the financial industry. So most of the institutions in Latin America still don't want to risk their reputations regarding money laundering, for example. But they have been, for example, joining our event in increasing their presence and learning about the opportunity. So I think that once cannabis is legal at the federal state, many institutions in Latin America, including pension funds, funds in general, banks, in general, the whole financial industry will be ready to join. And since they have been actively educating themselves, and definitely most of the attention right now in terms of investing in Latin America for the cannabis industry have been at the angel investor type of accredited investor. I think that through science and through education and through financial education, the stigma have been fought in Colombia, in Latin America, and definitely once Mexico legalized cannabis, I think is going to help to increase entrepreneurship, not only in Mexico or in all Latin America, but also in US. There's a lot of Mexican representatives in our community. And for example, in Los Angeles, most of the entrepreneurships and most of the entrepreneurs that are Latino are mainly from Mexico. And a very interesting number in California, in Los Angeles, you know, that is the biggest market in the world. Well, half of the license that are in process and regarding any type of cannabis business are led by Latinos. So definitely, I think that Latin America is taking away that stigma that for years our community had to face through fear and ignorance.
That's interesting. So do you think that banking is going to be like the catalyst to kind of help propel the industry? Do you think that cryptocurrency could help alleviate some of the banking issues in the meantime, or is it going to take the MORE Act, the safe banking, or just federal legalization? Why is that important, and what is it going to do for the industry?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's going to take the legalization at the federal level, at least for medicinal cannabis, if not recreational or adult use yet. It's going to change the perspective in Latin America, definitely, since many of industries, for example, last year were hit by the pandemic very, very strongly, like, for example, real estate And we have seen many, many real estate investors, for example, in Latin America now interested in joining the industry. And the only thing that is holding them back is the federal ban that we have currently. So I think that is going to take a while, and at least we need to wait until the legalization takes at the federal level. Many angel investors are now actively invested in Latin America and Latinos in U.S. We increased our network of accredited investors, for example, last year in about 35% of people that have been interested that they were not before. And that's part of it is also that cannabis became essential from the illegality. Now it's an essential type of commodity. And the results really under many industries were capable to grow under the context that we faced last year under the pandemic, under COVID-19, and cannabis was one of them. And if you go through the results of this first semester, it's keeping increasing in a higher rate. So that shows one of those few industries that is performing very, very well under our context, and that is attracting a lot of attention.
Why do you think there's been so many folks, why is there so many Latin American folks in California specifically that are these license holders? Or do they feel safe in the U.S. even though their family's back home? There's still that perception there. What makes California so unique for equity applicants versus, you know, everywhere else in Latin America? Why is it so condensed there? Why is it so accepted or approved of in California versus their home country?
Yeah, I think that California, Latino population in California is about 48%. So that explains a lot of why the most of the entrepreneurship in cannabis is happening actually in Los Angeles. And that's part of it. And also, I think that, California have been educating their potential customers regarding the benefits of cannabis since how many years ago? 25. So I think that probably not education works, and also the opportunity. California is now leading, is the state that is leading the growth in sales, and definitely one of the states that have most experience managing a medicinal and now recreational cannabis.
Yeah, I also heard there's been a slogan for a long time. I don't know what the slogan is in Spanish, but something to the extent of marijuana equals death. So I would think that hopefully that can be alleviated with maybe like the cartels equal death, but cannabis can save you. But yeah, that's up to how you guys are able to advertise. I am curious though how the population is responding to products and trends and behavior post-pandemic. I know in California that delivery and online services are dominating, but how that's impacting the overall cannabis economy moving forward. So you started out in Oregon. You saw the proliferation of people growing. You know from firsthand experience it's not easy. I've grown for a friend of mine who's since passed away with multiple sclerosis. It's not easy. It's not a weed. It just doesn't grow. So with 3,500 licenses in Oregon and seeing a lot of that, you know, go out the back door, knowing what's happening in Oklahoma with 7,500 licenses, how do you think that's going to play out in the U.S.?
Yes, I think that in the coming 5 years, cultivators are going to realize that the commoditization of cannabis is going to hit their operation and probably their finance. As any other type commodity in the world, you know, the fight is at the cheapest cost. And soon, When the federal legalization happens in US, US is going to realize that many competitors have the possibility to create bigger economies of scale. Mexico, Colombia, in general, or Latin America, Asia, India, Thailand. And cultivators in US have to address this, will have to address this issue and probably create some differentiation for their products that can increase and some value different than the cost or price so they can compete. And even though without a full market freedom, if you will, because we still have, we cannot import flour legally at the federal level in US, they will need to address cost and efficiencies of resources such as water and electricity. We have seen that most of the cultivators at the very beginning were providing incredible margins for their investors. But if you're only a cultivator in Oregon, for example, now the reality is that probably your margins have been decreased. Not only in Oregon, probably in California as well. And one that is a big challenge that I can see for growers, for mainly growers. If you have a vertical integration, I think that you will have a possibility to capitalize more from the retail perspective once a full market is open and you have to compete with big jurisdictions where economies of scale can be generated.
Why? For some people who don't understand vertical integration, because we don't have that in Washington, when you're looking at investment opportunities, why, or if somebody else is looking at getting into the industry, why is vertical integration important?
Vertical integration is important because you are, first of all, you are open new income streams for your organization. If you are only a cultivator, then you have to face Asian competitors and Latin American competitors. But if you have also under your management, another type of income coming from a retail, you can switch probably to a white label later on and still be competitive on making margins. Once you have to compete with a cost of flour in Colombia, for example, of 5 cents per gram, or perhaps a very, very good quality EU GMP now is around 13 cents per gram. So the future, and when you think about competing with that cost, I see that the right strategy will be some sort of differentiation of your product or just changing your strategy and evaluate some white label opportunities and importing.
5 cents, that's going to be really hard to compete with. So if Canada is currently doing it at around $6 a gram, and there's parts of the United States doing it for like $1.30 a gram, and Latin America can do it locally for 5 cents and European GMP for 13 cents, how's North America going to compete against Latin America, or will they?
I think that U.S. entrepreneurs should be focusing on brands. I think that branding is one of the biggest opportunities in the industry. Now, the industry is facing a consolidation stage where you have seen a lot of M&As going on in order to leaders take control of more and take more market share with their brands. So I think that if you focus yourself building a well-established brand in the cannabis industry, you can be very successful, and then see if the products at lower cost you can import, or if you somehow have the capacity to compete with those prices and offer some artisanal with once again a big differentiation in the final good. I think that you will be able to create some important synergies. But yeah, I think that branding, we don't have Coca-Cola of cannabis yet. So there's definitely in US with most of the population and the biggest market in the world, I will be focusing on branding.
For the average Latin American customer, is celebrity branding going to trigger them to make a purchase, or are they going to be more interested in the therapeutic medicinal benefits? What is it about the branding that's going to get people to actually purchase a product, in your opinion?
Both. I think that once the education, the more education takes place, the more stigma is going to be away. For example, in Latin America, regarding artists, reggaeton is one of the biggest musical movements, if you will, that is happening right now. So there's huge opportunity for branding the Latino population through reggaeton. Many of reggaeton artists have been looking at the space, just as in US, many rappers are looking at the space and probably have been very successful branding their products. I think that is a great opportunity to market recreational cannabis, but also the population and depending the audience and the generations. For example, in Colombia, baby boomers, that's the, let's say people of 60 plus years in Colombia will probably be more able to buy a product with some medicinal branding strategy, if you will, and younger people probably are going to be able, once recreational legalization happens in Latin America, definitely the artist is going to, they can definitely capitalize in branding. Mm-hmm.
So what is interest to you, knowing that there's obviously different segments, demands, needs, and wants from North America and South America? The Latin American market is much different, more conservative maybe to an area like Arizona, if you're going to isolate it like that. What is it about, you know, the Latino investments of it or Muzica Capital Group, that what is it that you guys are interested in? What investments are you guys looking at? You said vertically integrated branding. What are you guys concentrating on?
Yes, a lot of investors have been asking us to place funds and look for opportunities regarding dispensaries, brands. Those major aspects of the value chain in the industry have been very interested for Latin American investors. I think that real estate, because you're backing your investment with an asset, and usually Latin American investors usually are more conservative from our experience, especially in cannabis. And branding, I think that placing a brand in US, it's going to be a win.
I'm curious about the Latin American market in general, and what that's looking like. But before we dive into an overview of that, wanted to know about your advice about anybody who's trying to get into the Latin American market. What would you tell them?
Yes, please do your due diligence 3 times more rigorous, if you will, than any other type of industry. There's many risks to be mitigated. For example, in Colombia, there's a security risk. It's important to evaluate the region where you are going to place your operations or your investment. It's important to fill out all the type of regulations, just as any type of company, but especially in cannabis. You don't want to do anything illegal just by, you know, from ignorance. And it's important to have a good strategy for quick sales. I think that we have been able to take a look and do diligence and audits to more than 60 organizations in Latin America, mainly in Colombia. Colombia is now, I will say, the more mature market in the legal cannabis industry in the region, in Latin America. And what we have seen in Colombia is many great organizations with incredible teams, very professionals, but they usually lack a clear path to sales. clear path to revenue. Let's remember that Colombia is at the startup stage. It's an industry at the startup level. So they are defining and doing the research and development of the product services. And so when you don't have a record in sales and revenues, you need to provide future investors or a clear path to reach those revenues. We have seen valuations with lack of support of the estimates in revenues and sales. So this is something important when you're building an startup to have those goals in terms of revenues and sales clear. And back up those with contracts, with LOIs, with real compromises of purchase of whatever you're doing. So I think that will be one of, and if you're investing in a company, please make sure that the startup in Latin America have a clear path to sell.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, with that, let's see if you can give us a little presentation or overview about the Latin American market, if you want to.
Definitely. That in Latin America, the first country that was able to legalize cannabis back in 2013, if I remember well, was Uruguay at the federal, at the country level. In Latin America, we have a population of 600 million people, and we are expecting that the cannabis industry brings sales in 2028 up to $13 billion. So as you can imagine, for our region, this is a very representative number, especially because we are agricultural. Our economies are mainly agricultural. Most of the commodities and goods that Latin America exports to the world are agricultural based. So if you take a look to the biggest macroeconomic events that are happening right now, I will catalog cannabis as one of them, definitely, and perhaps crypto is the other one. So as a Latin American region, our biggest shot is cannabis right now to boost our economies and hopefully mitigate our poverty levels. So this is also why I founded Muisca Capital Group back in 2013, to see how can we help the region mitigate those gaps, because now the gap is even bigger after last year. So hopefully Latin America can see and pursue the opportunity, and we need our region to legalize cannabis as soon as we can. Argentina, medicinal cannabis is legal since 2017. Self-cultivation is allowed. However, the legalization and the regulation process have been very slow. Even if Argentina is legal since 2017, up to date, they don't have any license framework. Their regulatory framework is very complex and don't really align the states to the federal or to the country legal framework and regulation. Brazil, cannabis is not completely legal in Brazil. You cannot grow cannabis, but you can import. You can import CBD. THC is still illegal. You can import cannabis since 2018. The growth in sales in terms of import have been almost 30%. From last year, increasing tremendously under the pandemic, mainly the only legal component of the plant is CBD. In order to import CBD and commercialize cannabis in Brazil, you need to register your product at Anvisa, that is like the FDA of Brazil. If you have a strong, let's say if your product is already registered at FDA or at INVIMA, for example, that is like the FDA in Colombia, you're ready to go to Brazil. Mm-hmm. And make a the process of registration is pretty straightforward, and there is a huge market and it's growing. I will say one of the major opportunities in Latin America is definitely Brazil. Mm-hmm. Chile, medicinal cannabis is legal. Cultivation is very, very restrictive, and pretty much is allowed for collectives. So you need to pass a very rigorous process and have some sort of collective or nonprofit in order to cultivate. Self-cultivation is allowed, however. Something interesting about Chile is that they treat hemp from the very beginning in their regulation, of course, as agro-industrial good. So that brings a huge differentiation. For example, with Colombia, we have been treating the cannabis industry just as a pharmaceutical industry, and that have been bringing some limitations that probably Chile is not going to face, since they start treating from the very beginning hemp as agro-industrial product. Paraguay, we have medicinal cannabis legal since 2017. It's been regulating since 2018. However, the regulation have been very slow as well. No implementation, no license. There's some imports happening to Paraguay, mainly of CBD products. And in order to import anything to Paraguay, you need to follow a rigorous compliance process. You need to demonstrate that you're patient, etc. Mexico is in the process of regulating both medicinal and recreational cannabis at full. However, CBD is allowed and medicinal cannabis is allowed since 2017. Most of the commercialization, the legal commercialization of cannabis have happened regarding CBD. A lot of collectives and mainly the community, the legal cannabis community, entrepreneurs and investors have been placing many asks to the government in order to accelerate the process of regulating the license. Something very interesting about Mexico is their current situation. I think that full legalization is going to happen in Mexico once the cartels have some the government have some control on the illegal activities. I think that is going to be a limitation for Mexico full legalization process. And most of the entrepreneurs and investors that we have been able to reach and to learn about in Mexico, they are all interested. This is interesting, and they are all interested in working with hemp and CBD. They are afraid to compete with big cartels in terms of THC. So something that we expect from Mexico is that probably most of the THC legalization happens in Sinaloa after they fix whatever other issues they have with other substances. So this is going to take a while at the recreational level, but definitely there's many projects of in terms of CBD, cannabis, and also hemp. Peru, medicinal cannabis is legal since 2017. No regulation have been in place whatsoever. Imports of CBD are allowed. It's quite easy to import CBD in Peru in terms of other jurisdictions in the region. Ecuador have legalized the cannabis at the medicinal level. Regulation is ready. Licensing processes are happening right now. They have differentiated as well as Chile hemp, and they have been treating this commodity as agro-industrial, which is an improvement in comparison, for example, with another strong regulation like Colombia. No self-cultivation is allowed, unfortunately. Imports are allowed. You can import actually any type of derivative up to date to Ecuador, including some sort of THC. But if you are thinking about Ecuador, you will need to make sure that you follow the regulation regarding the percentage of CBD and THC. Uruguay was the first country in the world to legalize cannabis starting 2013, all forms, industrial, medicinal, and adult use. Up to date, they have been issued 20 licenses to grow hemp, 4 licenses to grow high THC, 16 licenses in terms of scientific research, and imports are allowed and have been made, and as well as exports. Uruguay, in comparison, for example, with Colombia, have been able to commercialize and export dried flower. This is something that Colombia is expecting to do after an improvement and modification of the current regulation happens. We are expecting to have that change this year. However, the process has been very slow. The government is, you know, last year, they didn't pay attention whatsoever to the industry. They only pay attention to manage the sanitary circumstance under the pandemic. So there's been a process very slow, unfortunately, for Colombia. The Caribbean is very interesting what's going on in the Caribbean. Aruba regulated legalized cannabis last year. The regulation is in process, registration. However, all entrepreneurs that have been able to register themselves in order to start the process of license, they are still waiting for guidance and requirements. But you cannot register yourself if you want to be part of the industry because it's closed. So they open about 3 to 4 months door to register yourself if you want to be a grower, if you want to have a retail, or if you want to make any kind of activity regarding that involves cannabis. Something interesting regarding Aruba is that it's foreign friendly. If you're a foreign, you can own a license, any type of license in Aruba, but the registration is closed. So unfortunately, you cannot apply right now for any type of license. Hopefully they open the door again, let's see. And the regulation is in process. So even if you have been registered in Aruba to obtain a license, you are still waiting to see what is going to look like the process of getting that license. In Antigua, Barbuda, Jamaica, St. Vincent, and Grenadines, medicinal cannabis is legal, but you need to be a resident, for example. They have legalized cannabis and provide procedures of obtaining license for cultivation, for retail, and processing, mainly, of both THC and CBD, but at the medicinal level. Colombia is, in our opinion, the biggest, I would say not the biggest, but the more mature market in Latin America, with a regulation that legalized cannabis in 1986, actually. We legalized cannabis in 1986, but we created all the regulation framework in 2016. So since 2016, you can apply for pretty much 4 type of license. You can cultivate, you can process, you can export, and you can conduct any scientific research. Up to date, we have the more diverse, if you will, market in terms of providing opportunities for diversification of portfolio. Only the two countries really that have license given in Latin America is Uruguay and Colombia, and some in Chile. But we saw the other data that show us that only 20 licenses have been given for cultivators. For example, here in Colombia, we have already about 550 licenses for growing, 430 in extraction, 120. That brings investors the opportunity to diversify their portfolio in the industry, for example. That makes Colombia a more mature market. 3,800 licenses are in process for small cultivars. This is a very, very important number. This number is important. Why? Because a big part of the peace process agreement in Colombia, we made finally peace after 50 years of civil war, was the legalization of cannabis. And was because we gave the opportunity to this small cultivators to join the legal industry, and they are in process to license what they have been done from our ancestral knowledge. Another important factor is how this commodity really, really looks very similar to coffee for us. And actually, in Colombia, we're expecting an industry bigger than coffee, banana, and flour together. We're expecting that from cannabis. It's a big deal for us, right? If you take a comparison to another psychoactive commodity, just like coffee, you can see that the coffee industry in Colombia is super similar. We have more than 4,000 small cultivars, small meaning coffee cultivars from 0 to 2 hectares all over Colombia. And about 500 big cultivars of coffee. So it's a very similar industry. The government have placed the cannabis industry as a national interest industry, bringing some decreases in taxes, some relief in terms of some funding from Banco Agrario, and we hope that the dry flower in Colombia can be commercialized for internal purpose and for exportation by the end of this year. This is some limitation that the industry is facing right now, and definitely that is showing in the revenues from last year and this first semester. So far, Colombia have exported 2 million hemp seeds to Colorado. This is pretty much one of the major exports that we have made. Once again, due to the limitation of exporting dry flower, and another challenge for the industry is definitely to build EU GMP extraction facilities that can refine all the extraction internally, so the extraction from Colombia can compete in the European market or North America in terms of extracts. Well, as I said before, we are in Latin America, we are here in the life cycle of the industry. Introduction, everybody's a startup. So we have been able through our platform help organizations to find seed capital, mainly from angel investors, and hopefully only four organizations up to date have been showing revenues. Let's say in the range of up to $3 million after 5 years of legalization. So something went wrong. Really, something went wrong. And that something is unfortunately the regulatory framework didn't allow the country to export or commercialize dry flower, which is the major component of the supply chain. This is a occupies almost the 50% of sales in all cannabis industry, and we are not allowed to be part of that. So that's one of the reasons, in my opinion. Another reason is that the government back then saw the industry as a primary activity industry. That means that didn't allow, we up to date don't have any regulation regarding secondary activities, ancillaries. And soon the whole industry realized that they are not Superman or Supergirl, so they cannot do anything. So unfortunately, while everybody was building their cultivars, their extraction facility, nobody was paying attention to the ancillaries, and nobody was paying attention to open reliable channels of sales and distribution, logistics, et cetera, et cetera. So unfortunately, that decreased the economic opportunity. Let's remember picks and shuffles back then in the gold rush, and or the statistics in a mature market just as US, where we have seen the biggest margins and more generation of income is definitely in the activities regarding the affiliates. Colombia is still waiting to hear some regulation regarding that, for example. And another important issue that we have facing right now is the fair value. There's a fair value already in Latin America. This is important because, for example, as a consultant like myself, our organization, we have seen so many crazy valuations ranging from the $30 million to $1 billion, really. And it's important. It's important to recognize that even if we are at the startup phase in Latin America, there's already a fair value and there's already a comparison of organizations in the space with valuation of their companies. For example, in Colombia, that is the more mature market in Latin America, we are seeing that the fair value is about $7 million to $12 million, depending the assets that are backing that valuation. And well, thank you, Josh.
this was
a review regarding the regulatory framework in Latin America, the opportunities. As I said before, we really need to move forward and start capitalizing the opportunity in our region regarding cannabis. It's time to educate ourselves, to evolve from fear and trauma. As you can imagine, for a Latin entrepreneur thinking about joining the industry, after being, you know, chased for cannabis our entire life, because I remember back then in the 90s in the 2000s at the beginning, if you show a passport from Colombia, you needed to do a second line. And that's imagine. Now let's be part of the cannabis industry. Well, there is a terrible and a big trauma, and you feel shameful, really. And I remember that when I started to join the industry, just as you said, my family asked me, why? You're going to destroy your entire professional career. But I saw the opportunity, and especially not only the financial opportunity, which is super clear, but also the social responsible opportunity of helping our community to dignify themselves again, first, to recognize the value of what we have been done from our culture, our ancestral knowledge, and yeah, to join a tremendous opportunity that I'm pretty sure that we are not going to see this opportunity once again in our lifetime. So it's time to be part of this.
I wanted to ask about the cartel-driven aspect of cannabis. Some have speculated, myself included, have speculated that the slow rollout in Canada, especially British Columbia, had to do with the stronghold that the Hells Angels, for example, have on that area and not wanting to open up. They were doing really well in the legacy market. Why would they want to open up these legitimate rec shops? How much does a cartel have, and how willing do you think that they will be to legitimize? They're probably going to get involved in cannabis, is my assumption. Will they become legitimate or just go into cocaine or other, you know, heroin or whatever? More high yielding commodities.
The aspect is different by jurisdiction. Let's say Colombia. Colombia cultivars were dominated by militia, by its FARC, for example, FARC members. And in part, as I said before, part of the peace process agreement was to legalize more than 6,000 hectares of cannabis in Valle del Cauca in Colombia. They are part of the legalization now. So this is a good example of what can happen in Mexico, since we did it in Colombia, and it's been successful in terms of many small cultivators, indigenous groups wanted to just be away from all this violent habitat that they have been used to since 50 years ago. So nobody, trust me, nobody at the end of the day wants more blood or problems or this type of violent issues around whatever you're doing in a day-to-day basis. So in Colombia, what happened is that, of course, there's still some violence regarding black marketing cannabis, but the government have been successfully legalizing the small cultivars, some of the meat market delivery guys, if you will, have disappeared and go and join other criminal activities, unfortunately. But it's working. It definitely works. Colombia is a great example of how legalization ended up work. And this can be replicated all over the world. I think that is our diligence to keep reminding people that legalizing cannabis means making peace in other parts of the world, for, you know, for Americans, for example. Thank you for your vote. It's important. I think that Mexico has a huge challenge. Mexican black market is the market that dominates California. Most of the flower that is still sold on East LA, for example, is still semilla from Mexico, from the black market. I think that once the commoditization keeps happening and the stabilization of prices happens, I think that everybody will see, even the black market is going to see the benefit of joining, even if you have to pay taxes. And definitely, for example, in California, the biggest market share is Sinaloa, if you really think about it. That's the most sold flower still. And I think that once Mexico regulates it, and once more Latino-oriented entrepreneurs are leader companies in the space in Los Angeles, legalization is going to happen at the end of the day. Nobody wants to be arrested. Nobody wants to have any type of issues. Another important aspect of full legalization happens in US and actually in the world is the immigration reform. We need an immigration reform. It's really ridiculous at this point to punish people for working in the cannabis industry. Just working, not even investing or not even leading organizations. But if you are a resident alien in US and you can work legally You have your green card. You cannot join the cannabis industry without facing the loss of your residency. And you cannot apply for your citizenship status if you work in the cannabis industry, because somehow you're immoral. Immoral. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that now that we have been the most punished minorities in U.S. For cannabis and other substances, now that we have this opportunity to do things right, now the U.S. government is pushing us even harder because we cannot even work in the space. I think that needs to happen. That needs to happen to see a full legalization of cannabis, full integration and social equity, really. Even for investors and entrepreneurs at all levels, I think that is going to benefit everyone. It's going to benefit that 30% of Latino population that is probably now buying from the black market. Let's help them switch to the legality. But that is only happening once we will be able to join the full spectrum, not only the purchasing power, the purchase power so far. I think that federalization, legal federalization of cannabis is important, and also immigration reform regarding the use of cannabis and the opportunity to work in the cannabis industry.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't realize that it would limit or prohibit their ability from becoming citizens. And you know, agriculture in the U.S. is something that most people, most citizens don't want those jobs. And we saw that in the Carolinas when they were asking any an available American to take jobs, and nobody would take the job. So without these, you know, immigrant laborers primarily coming from Latin America, we wouldn't get our vegetables and cannabis. So it's pretty crazy that they're still doing that. So thank you for bringing that up. We talked about a lot today. I want to wrap up with this last question on the limitations of exporting flower. Let's get rid of all of that. Let's say we are at the point where there is global legalization. It's legal in the U.S. and then the United States went to the World Health Organization and everywhere else and said, all right, let's commoditize this. Let's make some money. What is your ideal scenario? Where would you be headquartered at? Where would you operate from? You know, where would you recommend that people try to create a vertically integrated international cannabis business in Latin America?
Yeah. Well, definitely I will be cultivating in a place where economic skills can be created. That means perhaps Latin America or some parts of Asia. And I will be focusing on building a recognized brand in US. Will be interested in retail opportunities in US. And yeah, definitely, you know, I will take the opportunity of hundreds of years of knowledge and a huge learning curve of cultivation in places where cannabis have been cultivating since forever. I think that is going to be very difficult to compete with hundreds of years of knowledge in wild cultivation of cannabis. That means India. I will take a look to India. That means Asia and definitely Latin America. I will definitely take a look to the social responsibility aspect. In fact, there's many investors that now take that into their decision process, definitely. The consumption of water and electricity, I think, is a concern. It should concern us right now if you're a human being living in this planet and thinking about leaving this planet in a good shape. I think that we should take a look there. And definitely, you know, take the opportunity in US. I think that California has to be taking into account in any type of decision regarding cannabis is the biggest market. And I was focusing on developing branding and see if I can develop operations in terms of cultivation, Asia, Latin America, in terms of extraction, India. I think that India is going to be one of the biggest players in terms of extraction. They have been extracting for pharma industry since forever. They know, they navigate perfectly all the FDA requirements. They are actually the ones that make more of the generic pharmaceutical goods that are sold in US. So India, I will definitely take a look on India regarding, you know, lab extraction. I think branding in all North America, retailing in North of America, just comparing cannabis with any other type of psychoactive good, beer, coffee, and probably you're going to make a strong strategy for your business.
Shout out to India. One of my platforms, there's about 85% of all listeners are coming out of India. So they're definitely interested in the business and aspects of cannabis and getting involved in the industry to one degree or another. But you're the first person to come on the podcast and mention India as a potential market. Obviously, huge population. The culture there is strong too, I think, with maybe low THC cannabis. So maybe a good opportunity there. Is there any links? How can people find you? How can people get participate in the Latino Investment Summit or get invested with the Musica Capital Group?
Yes, definitely. We are conducting two events in July. July 23rd, we have at the Latino Science Forum, we put together more than six scientists from Latin America. It will be very interesting to learn about the latest research results regarding medicinal cannabis and see what Latin America is doing in terms of science and also commerce. This is going to be a great opportunity for network. I know that most of the organizations in US are now at the consolidation phase. So I'm pretty sure that they will be interested in learning about how to expand their brands into Latin America. This is a great place to learn how we are doing. And also on July 28th, we have about four companies pitching at Latino Investment Summit. These events, you can find these events in Eventbrite, you can find these events in latinoscienceforum.com, latinoinvestmentsummit.com. We hope to see you there. This is a great way to learn about what's going on in the Americas in terms of cannabis, to hear about opportunities. We have opportunities from California, from Canada, from Colombia. Most of them have operations in Latin America. Some of them don't. But we make sure that they fulfill some of our basic due diligence. So they are good opportunities in the space and to learn. I think that if you're thinking about starting your own business in cannabis, this is a great way to learn about what you're thinking doing and investing as well. Usually our events are a mix of education and fundraise, if you will. So everyone is welcome.
Yeah, we'll have all those links to all of those, your company, the events, your LinkedIn, all of that will be in the description in the show notes. So we will definitely.
Thank you, Josh.
Yeah. All right. So I want to thank, we're going to roll this one up. I want to thank my guest, Carol Ortega Algara. She is the managing director, Musica Capital Group. Carol, thanks for being on the Talking Hedge.
Thank you, Josh.
I'm Josh Kincaid. Yeah, I appreciate it. I'm Josh Kincaid. This is the Talking Hedge. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, or don't. And I'm out. Don't forget to smash that like button on your way out and check out these other videos that we've got.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
99.9% of our DNA is identical. It's a 0.1% that truly makes us different and unique. And that's what the show is about. Find out that 0.1% about your favorite guests. Find out what music they like, their first cannabis experience, and even what their room looked like growing up. But more importantly, or as important, their journey. Learn what makes them unique on Everything Is Personal.